it's not gonna be easy.
What's easy is floating downstream.
What's easy is being like everyone else.
You were made to stand out.
You were put here for a reason.
Normal isn't working anymore.
Look around.
Look around at the people who are giving you advice.
Do they have the results you're looking for?
I'm proposing a radical change.
It's time to fight.
It's time to fight the current.
Hello, this is Danny Campisi, and welcome to the Fight the Current podcast. I'm joined in the studio today with my co-host, best friend, and business partner, Aaron Thomas. Today, we're also joined by my brother, Tony. Tony is a loving husband and a brand new father of a beautiful baby boy and owner of two very successful companies, a thought leader, and one of my biggest heroes in the world.
Awesome. Well, episode 4 of the Fight the Current podcast. Tony, we are super excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here with us.
Absolutely. I'm pleased to be on with you guys.
Awesome. Well, I know that you just recently became a very first-time father. So my biggest question for you, Tony, is can you take us back to those very first moments when you met your son? I know that this was your very first child. So you're definitely in a new position, a new kind of chapter of your life, if you will, becoming a father. So can you just take us back and explain a little bit more about what you were feeling in those first moments?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, yeah, the new chapter is right. But honestly, it feels like this has been a culmination of many, many years of thinking and imagining and planning. And, you know, since I was old enough to desire children, I've always wanted children. And it felt like for years and years of my life, I had tried to imagine what that day would be like when I had my first son. Now, I say son because I had always imagined my first child being a boy. Now, if it was a girl, great, you know, it wouldn't have been bad. It would have been great just the same. But I had always imagined my firstborn being a son. And God has blessed me with that. But I felt like up until this point, I've been trying to like imagine it as if it actually was happening. And the feelings that I thought I was going to have paled in comparison to what they actually were. And when I, at May 15th, 3:53 in the afternoon, my wife gave birth to my son. And as he was coming out, I literally could not hold it together. I just seen her healthy, him healthy. He just started wailing like crazy right when he came out, just crying like crazy. They didn't even have to slap him. He was ambitious from the start, but he was just crying and just, I couldn't hold it together. I was bawling. And my wife's like, get the phone, you know, so take some pictures of him and stuff. And it was immediately overwhelming. And then shortly after that, as I'm watching him get cleaned up on the table, a strange sense of dullness came over me, and I was looking at him, and I was like, man, I feel like I should be feeling something different. Like, I feel like, why am I not crying anymore? Why am I not like jumping for joy? Like, I'm looking at him, and it's like, it was like a calm, but a calm that almost brought guilt to my heart, because I was like, man, why am I not feeling more? And I think it was just because it was so much anticipation. I had imagined this for so long. And it was actually a lot different than I thought. The feeling that I got, it was much better, but it was a lot different. And it was just so much anticipation, and it mounted right there. And it was like your wedding day, or like your a big, huge thing that you're planning, like your board exams or something like that, where you plan. And then it's like, boom, it happens. And then you're like, wow, like that's exhausting. But that night, you know, sitting there with him and looking at him, looking in his eyes and all that kind of stuff, him grabbing my finger and all that, the feelings came back and then some. It was like, I can't really explain it, but you feel this like sense of protection, like immediately you get defensive, like that's my son and I won't let anything happen to him. And it's been just amazing ever since. So that was the greatest experience of my life, really.
That's awesome.
It was, he's the best thing I ever made.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about how your life has changed since? I'm sure the dynamic might have changed around the house now having a newborn. Can you just kind of go through what things have changed, if any, through kind of family life or your relationship with Mariah, that new sense of urgency now that you guys have a son to raise together? Can you just talk a little bit about how your life has changed since?
Yeah, well, in my opinion, I have been groomed for this opportunity my whole life. I've never been like a partier, a stay out all nighter, a video gamer or anything like that. I've always kind of been a family man in my soul. And it hasn't been as hard as people made it out to be. At first, like people would, I would tell them, like we were expecting a baby, and they'd be like, oh, you know, get your sleep now. You're never going to get any sleep. Or, you know, you can't run now. They don't have a return ticket. You don't have a receipt, like this kind of stuff. It made it seem like I actually, in 9 months of my wife carrying this baby, I only heard one positive thing. And that was from a cashier at Wise. It was a man, and his name is Lars. So if, Lars, if you're listening, you gave me hope. And he said, literally,
God,
he said,
Lars.
Yes, God bless Lars. Lars said, they're a joy. He said, enjoy every minute of it. They're a joy. He said that. And if you're a guy or girl out there expecting a baby, you know how strange it is to get any positive feedback when you tell people that you're about to have a child. It's almost like today in this world, children are a burden. You know what I mean? And that they become like a change in your life that's bad. But, it, you know, we're changing diapers. I mean, my son goes through 10 to 15 diapers a day. He spits up all of, I mean, just today we were talking with the neighbors, and he spit up all over his shirt and spit up on their floor. And I mean, there's obviously changes. You can't be selfish anymore. It's a total selfless existence now. When he wakes up, we have to wake up. When he's hungry, he has to eat. And, you know, I give major props to my wife because she's the one. I work out full time, and she is with him and has to feed him. She's breastfeeding him right now, and then it's every 2 to 3 hours. And life has changed. It's turned from a selfish endeavor to a selfless endeavor. And you know what? I've wanted that, honestly. When you get to a certain point in life, you know, especially with Mariah and I, we have spent the last, we've been together for 10 years, and we have spent the last 10 years working on our own things. And it's like thinking of our own self and doing things for ourselves. And you know what? You eventually get tired of that. You eventually get tired of living for somebody else. And you want that person to, or that thing to take care of. And I'll break here and say that a lot of people try to replace that with something like pet ownership or a hobby or something like that. You know, that people call it fur babies. And let me tell you, it's not a baby. It's not a human being. It's,
but it is furry.
It's furry. Yeah, you're right about that. And the fact of the matter is, it's a pet. Like, people try to replace that. And I'm not taking anything outside of pets, but it's, we have a desire, I think, as humans to raise and nurture and you know, help something, you know, small and innocent grow up. And people try to replace it with animals, and it just doesn't work. That's not the same thing. And any parent who's a parent of a real human will understand that. And anyone trying to replace it, it just doesn't work. Like, our life has changed because now we are selflessly raising this young human baby that is fully dependent on us in all ways. And of course it has changed, but it's been an honest to God blessing. And it's given my life more meaning and purpose than I have ever had before. I heard a guy say one time that life sucked before kids. I have to agree. Life sucked. I didn't realize how bad life sucked until my son came into this world. So it's been great though.
And I'm sure you'd agree, in basically, Tony, in comparison, you'd say it seems like your life sucked. You almost, like you said, you didn't even realize it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you don't know it. Like, you don't know it until you're in it. You know, it's like the people who say fur babies, oh, my cat is my baby, or my cat is my daughter. You know, they don't know if they don't have a real daughter. They you just don't know. So you can't really get on people for like not understanding, like myself. Like, I can't beat myself up like, oh, life was bad before. But it really was lackluster because it was selfish. And I think selfishness is just inherent. Like, when you don't have a baby to raise, you have to be selfish or else you're just weird, you know? But now it has shown me, it's like perspective. When you get on top of the hill, you can see down and see where you came from and see, oh my gosh, like, this is amazing up here. And you would have never known had you not climbed the hill, or you would have never known, you know, how amazing children are until you have, you know. And I've only had them for 3 weeks, but it's been great since. So,
and I know you and I have had conversations as brothers on just the fact that you've always wanted to be a father and all the dreams that you've had for family businesses and just how you want to raise your son and your future daughters and just the vision you have for the Campisi family and for your family. So my question is, what is your vision for Eli? What is your vision for your son and even your future children? What is your vision for your kids?
My biggest vision or hope for my children is that they have the belief in their heart that life is what they make it, and that life is an opportunity to make it either good or bad. And you know, I grew up always since I was a young kid as with a thought in my mind that the world is my oyster. Like I can bend nature to my will. I can do whatever it is I want to do. And that feeling, I say all the time that my past is my biggest motivation for my future because I love my childhood so much. And I think that the reason I love my childhood so much is because it was full of number one, freedom, which is the key to any bit of hope in this world, is freedom. And then also the hope that things are going to get better as I go forward in life. It's like, oh, I feel like I can do anything I want. You know, if I want to go, you know, ride my bike down the street and put cards in it and sound like a motorcycle, I could do it. And you know, if I want to skateboard and ollie off that deck, I can do it, you know. And if I want to start a business, I can do it. If I want to sell candy bars to kids in school, I can do it. I can do anything that I want. And what I want for my kids to know is that they also can. The only thing, like Steve Jobs said, that the world is created by people just like you and I who just decided to do something. The things that we call normal have been created by someone who just decided to do something. It's not that difficult. And I just pray and hope that my children have that thought that anything is possible, that they can do what they want, because that's my biggest vision as a father, to show them that life is good. And I'm not saying in the sense that you don't have to go to town, go to city and work hard and, you know, suit and tie. No offense to anyone who wears a suit and tie and works hard in that sense. But it's not about, like, if you literally want to move off grid, raise chickens and livestock, grow all your own food and spend every day with your kids and your wife, you can do that. And that's what I want my kids to know. That's what I want my kids to believe truly in my heart. That's what I believe truly in my heart, that I can do anything. I can design my life how I want it. That's my greatest vision for them, because I feel like that's the way to give somebody hope, is to know that at any time they can make a change, at any time they can make their life better, or they can just maintain the great life that they have. Like, there's not something waiting around the corner to ruin your life. There's something waiting around. There's an opportunity waiting around every corner, and they can get that if they believe it in their heart. Confidence is my, you know, that's the key right there, is to know that everything you want in life is possible if you're willing to go get it, whether big or small in the world's eyes. It's yours if you want it.
That's great. So I have a question, kind of just to dig in here, Tony, because I think everything you said is awesome. How do you plan on doing that? Because I would have to imagine that most parents want their kids to believe in themselves, and most parents want their kids to believe that they can achieve anything. But what is your strategy to help your kids to feel the way you do? Because I know from knowing you for 25 years that you do believe in yourself, and you do believe all those things, and you believe the world's your oyster, and you can accomplish anything and do anything, and you've become very successful because of that. So my question is, what's your strategy to help Elijah and your future children to duplicate that?
Well, the Bible says that a tree is judged by its fruit. And if a tree does not bear fruit, it's cut off and thrown into the fire. And the last thing I want is to be thrown into the fire. So I want to bear fruit in my life so that when my parent or when my kids follow my example as their parent, they see that actually happening. Dad says that he can do it. Dad says, I'll bet you I'll beat you up that tree. I'll climb that tree. Oh, Dad's going to do it. Dad says, I want to start this business. Dad says, let's spend 6 months. This is my biggest dream. Honestly, it doesn't sound like a big dream for everybody, but I don't care if it sounds big to everybody. This is my thing. I want to spend 6 months in the mountains, 6 months at the beach. That's 12 months, full year. When Dad says it, if Dad's working to that point, if Dad is trying to get there, and he does it, that's proof right there. To me, if somebody else has done it, that proves that it happened. To me, also, if nobody else has done it, that doesn't remove it from all possibility. basically, I want my children to be able to follow my example and not be a wimp. Wimpiness in this life, being a sis, that's my biggest fear for my children, to be scared of life, to be scared that when you make a decision that you'll not be able to follow it through. Basically, I want to just show them that with confidence and the willingness to learn as you go, not have to figure it, you don't have to figure it all out now. You just willingness to start and figure it out on the way, that you can get to where you want to go. You can keep, moving down the path. And basically, an example is everything. I don't care. They're not going to care what I say if what I do is not working out or is not, the fruit is not being bared. It's example, example, example. Everything that I do, I want them to see what I'm trying to help them believe in me and their mom, of course.
Well, Tony, if you treat your children or your son anybody like you treated your younger brothers, you'll be always saying don't be a sis.
Well, it's an important thing, especially for men in these days. There's a lot of pansy men out there who it's a man's responsibility in this world, and I'm going to tell my son this, it's a man's responsibility in this world to get things done and to do what needs to be done. Somebody's got to worry about this world's problems. It's got to be, and I'm going to go as far to say that, yes, women can do it, but it's a man's job. In my opinion, it's a man's job in this. It's a man's job and a woman's job to say, I'm going to take care of it. But if a man's not doing it, if a man is just sitting around playing video games all day, that's not going to work out. That doesn't work out. So it's a man and a woman's job to say, I'm going to take control of my life. But for my son, I'm not going to say it's a woman's job. I'm going to say it's a man's job because he's a man. And there is a difference. We're going to make sure that he understands that being strong is something that needs to be done, because the world doesn't get it. America didn't get great from weak men. America didn't get great from weak women. But America certainly is not going to go anywhere if people continue to follow the trends out there today. So not being a sis is really saying, I'm not going to be a wimp. I don't know how else to say it. Like, it's a very simple concept. Like, I'm going to be strong. I'm going to make my decision, and I'm going to make it fully. And I'm going to go and do what I have to do. There's so many people who try to avoid what they have to do. They just want to walk around with their headphones on and texting all day. Like, they want to avoid what they have to do to live this like free life, but discipline creates freedom. A lack of discipline creates servitude. Don't be a sis. Get disciplined. Do what you got to do, because that's going to create the life that you want.
That's awesome. Well, Tony, I just want to dive in on a couple of things that you've actually created and that you've done to share the people that are listening to this podcast, especially when they go to check out you on social media and get to know you in real life. You're not all talk. You actually run two very successful businesses. You have a huge following on social media, and you have results. You have that fruit on the tree that you brought up. So, two-part question for you. Number one, tell us about the two companies that you do currently run. And after that, is it a myth that you can balance business and pleasure? Is it a myth that you can balance work life and family life?
All right. Well, if I don't get to the second one, remind me. Sometimes I get going and I forget what the second part of the question. But first thing is first is I started multiple businesses since I got out of high school. And high school was really a really fun time to me. But it was not at all like my preparation for my future life. Like, I didn't see it as that. I saw it as, fun thing to do and, hang out and take tests and all that kind of stuff. You just got it done. But I got out of high school. I did some other things. But around in my older years, when I had to start like paying bills and all that kind of stuff, I started a business called Dirty Worm, which is it actually started as Tony's Bait and Compost. And it's basically a live bait business. Where for fishing, for those who don't understand what live bait is, it's basically a business where we raise earthworms on organic waste to solve a problem. And I determined that the biggest threat, I'm a hunter and I'm a fisherman, and I love the outdoors. I love to grow my own food. I love to do things outside. I love it right now. The honeysuckles are in the air. It's just awesome. I love you know, I live in rural Pennsylvania. I live on a farm. I get to see everything, you know, that growing and the wilderness and all that kind of stuff. And I just love that. And I believe that the greatest threat to those things is the growing trash problem and modern agriculture. So basically, I'm not here to knock either one of those. I'm here to create a solution, because we can complain all day, but I'm not here to complain. I'm here to create a solution. So basically, earthworms eat organic waste, and organic is not in the in the grocery stores, like the organic, you know, fruit snacks and all that kind of stuff. That's not what organic means. Look it up in Webster's dictionary. It means of natural descent, or natural origin, excuse me, not descent. Of natural origin. So organic is anything that was once alive, you know, as far as waste, you know, worms will eat that. So we collect organic waste from our public here in Pennsylvania, and we feed the worms that, because it creates two things, or it solves one thing and creates another thing. Basically, the trash is going to go to the landfill, or it's going to come here. So we're able to divert. Last year, we were able to divert over 10,000 pounds here to our facility in the pursuit of raising earthworms, which is incredible. I mean, you can throw this most disgusting stuff in these bins, and it turns into the second part where I said it creates something, an organic in the sense it is fully natural, no pesticides, no pasteurization, nothing, organic compost that can be used in growing food or plants or anything like that. You can use it as a fertilizer, you know, for your vegetable garden or whatever. So that's my pride and joy, my passion. I also started another business right out of high school that it was basically a landscaping company. I did that for a while, and then I ended up not being mature enough to really see it through, and I got out of it. I'm not like Aaron Thomas on this video, who basically from birth was so mature, and he knew that he wanted to be a business owner and had what it takes. When I was 19, I didn't have what it takes to run a business. I thought it was all fun and games. So when it stopped being fun and games and I actually had to sit down and do paperwork and invoice and deal with customers who weren't willing to pay on time, I was like, I don't want to do this. It worked out that my dad took over the business, and a few years later, I was at a different point in my life. I was always an entrepreneur. I was always looking for ways to get, you know, out of the rat race, but I didn't stick with the landscaping business initially. When my dad was doing the landscaping business, he was turning away a ton of other work, basically all the work that landscapers get asked to do but don't have time to do. So I started a business called Camp Easy Property Service, where we basically did everything. The bulk of what we do now is landscaping, power washing, that kind of stuff, property maintenance and upkeep, making things look nice, painting, you know, doing different things, junk hauling. I mean, I've done one of everything, I think, now. But that's my second business. That is where I spend the majority of my time, because if anyone who knows, with your pride and joy takes a lot of TLC. It takes a lot of tender, loving care. It takes a lot of money, you know, and to raise dirty worm up to where I want it to be, it takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of time, you know, to keep pouring into there. So we don't really pull much from that business. We just keep rotating that back in, you know, what comes at, you know, you reap what you sow. We just sow it right back into the business. So those are my two businesses. That's how I make my living, and I support my family. So that's what I do right now.
That's awesome, Tony.
Go ahead, Aaron.
No, I was just going to say, one of the things that I most respect about you is that you truly embrace what it means to be an entrepreneur. A lot of people, they go into business for the pure reason to make money or just to make a living. And you truly solve a problem with a solution. That's exactly what entrepreneurship is all about, finding a solution to a problem. And through Dirty Worm, that's completely evident that you noticed that there was a problem, you found a solution, and now that solution is now an opportunity that you can use to kind of provide for your future family. So 100%, right. I commend you a lot for what you're doing, Tony. I have a lot of respect for you and your business success. I always enjoy seeing it on social media, and I know the people that are listening right now, I highly encourage you guys to go check out Tony on Facebook, what he's doing in both of his businesses and in his personal life. Truly, truly commendable, Tony.
I appreciate that, man. It's been a fun ride, and I'm honored to be able to take care of what I've been blessed with the chance to take care of. So I know you asked the second part of the question. Can you repeat that second part of the question?
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. So the second part is, you and I have had conversations before about kind of the myth of work-life balance. So I know that you have some strong opinions on the matter, so let's talk a little bit about that before we get to our next topic.
Yeah, well, the greatest frustration of my life as an entrepreneur has been trying to find this Sasquatch, which is work-life balance. I don't honestly believe that it exists, because if you think about it, work-life balance, you say, I'm going to take my life, the things that I love, and I'm going to put it on the one side of this seesaw, and then I'm going to take my work and I'm going to put it on the other side, and I'm going to see them as the same. And that doesn't work for me. I'd rather think of my life as a pyramid. And honestly, I've gotten to this point over time trying to find this work-life balance, because there's always something that you can do. There's always something that's coming up, especially if you work from home like I do. There's always something you could do. You could be up till 12 a.m. You know, you could be up till 3 a.m. always working. So in order to find a work-life balance, you're going to be looking for Sasquatch. You're never going to find that cat. He doesn't exist. So you have to put your life into perspective. And it's kind of like a pyramid. Like, I put my God at the top. My wife is under that. My son is under that. My friends and family is under that. And all the things that I love. And those are the things that drive my work. So my work, it's kind of like the Big Rocks principle, where if you have a jar and you have three other jars, little jars, the ones filled with big rocks, the other ones filled with gravel, and the other ones sand. Your big rocks are your big priority. My God, my wife, my kids, my friends, my family, the things that I love. That's my big rocks. And then I have my gravel, which is my work. And then the sand is like all the stupid calls and texts and all the emails and the things that dings and buzz and all that stuff, the things that come in the mail, junk mail, all that. That's all the sand. Well, if you do what most people do, they take the work, they'll put that in first. And then they'll put the sand in. And then if they have any time left over, they'll focus on the big things. But if your goal is to fill that jar, you have to put the big rocks in first. And I'm telling you, that should be your goal. Put the big rocks in first, then put the gravel, then put the sand. You're going to get a full jar, and you're going to focus on the best, the most important things first. And then you're going to filter in the other things around that. And that's going to allow you to keep your focus where it should be. I'd rather think, if you think about it as a pyramid, like I said, the top things are what drive the work. And that's how you find a work-life balance kind of thing. Like, I mean, it's incredible when you think about it. You're not bound. Like, why would you ever want to balance your wife and son or your family or the things that you love, maybe your fur babies, against work? You know, work is so far down the line. Now work is very important. But it pales in comparison to how important your wife is, you know, God, your faith, your kids, all that kind of stuff. So there is no such thing as work-life balance. There's a thing of driving motivation, and your family, the top priority things should be what you spend most of your time thinking and working about. And then your work just filters in around it. So, and I'll take a second here to say, entrepreneurship by definition is somebody who creates systems so that they can get out of the day to day. So they're not working in the business, they're working on the business. They're creating solutions to fix problems in the world. Yes, they're also creating solutions to fix problems in people's lives. And they're working on the business, not in the business. So many people say, I'm an entrepreneur, and then they start a restaurant and they spend every single day and night in their restaurant. You know, that's not entrepreneurship. That's small business ownership. It's still commendable, but entrepreneurs design solutions to remove themselves from the things that anyone can do so that they can focus on the big things. They can focus on their family. They can focus on the running large corporations when they're not in the day to day. So that's, you know, entrepreneurship is so big, and delegation is the biggest thing. If you can't delegate, you'll never find any semblance of quote-unquote work-life balance. If you can't let people do what you can't or don't have time to do, if you want to do it all, you'll never find it. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, Tony. Thank you. I want to go to a topic that I think is very prevalent now in today's society, and I think it's something that you do very well, and it's the topic of technology. So I was actually sent this post. It was off of entrepreneur.com. I'm just going to go ahead and read it to you, and I just want to get your thoughts on exactly what it is that it's saying and kind of your interpretation of things. So it says, how do you find your purpose? We live in a society where we are being bombarded by stimulus. Now more than ever, we're plugged into a rapidly evolving wired world. The dings, rings, and buzzes that emanate from our smartphones seem only to stop when we forget to recharge. But in those rare quiet moments, we hear this internal voice telling us that life is supposed to be more than just accumulating stuff, achieving professional success, and enjoying the moment. Life is supposed to be about a deeper meaning or purpose. So I just want to ask you, Tony, how do you, with juggling everything that you do, with your work, your family, all of that, how does technology play a part of it? How do you see technology being involved in your business, and how do you kind of step away from that, if you will, once your work day is finished, so that you can, like you said, put those big rocks in, you can focus on your God, you can focus on your wife, and you can focus on your son? How do you kind of remove technology from that equation?
Gotcha. Well, I'll say, first of all, that quote is awesome, and it really does sum up everything that I believe. And another quote I really like is that it says, life is what happens between Wi-Fi signals. And, you know, I'll take a second here to use an example I use all the time. Would you guys agree with me that a hammer is a tool?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. And would you agree that a hammer used to build a house would be better than using a hot sauce bottle, for example?
Most likely.
Yeah, I would say, because if you're whacking nails with a hot sauce bottle, you're going to have hot sauce all over the wall, and, you know, it's not going to be a good thing. Okay, so imagine, if you will, somebody that, you know, they use a hammer, and then they have to go to the bathroom, they go into Target, and they're going to walk around with their wife and look at bras and underwear for the next hour, and they say, hey, wait, babe, I got to go to the bathroom, and they step into the bathroom, they step up to the urinal, and they pull out a hammer and stare at it the whole time, you know. Or imagine if people got in accidents because they're staring down at a hammer, you know. Wouldn't that be ridiculous?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, absolutely. Or the, you're in line at the bank and the lady says, next please, and the person in front of you staring down at a hammer, and they don't hear them, and they have to, next please, excuse me, you know. And then you know you're standing there trying to get things done, and they're staring down at their hammer. Well, that's what I see when I see people staring down at their phone. I just saw someone today. They're walking across Route 30 with their face down at their phone. Like, that's dangerous. Don't do that. Like, people are so inundated. It's like you have one left arm, one right arm, one left leg, one right leg, and a cell phone. Like, that's how people are, especially like young kids today. But I see it in everybody. People think it's like some fifth extremity. And, you know, the biggest thing is we have allowed that to happen. You know, if you want to quit smoking, you got to, like, limit it, you know. But people have, because, like, technology hasn't been considered, like, terrible yet, people are, like, so addicted to it that they can't step away from it at all. And as a business owner, of course, I get way more calls and texts and emails and all that kind of stuff than your average person. I guess I would say, I'm assuming that if you're not in business, like if you have a job, and there's nothing wrong with a job, but if you have a job, like, most of the details are figured out for you. So you shouldn't be on the phone, on the, you know, text all this time, you know, getting things done. You're probably wasting time. But, you know, like, if people were walking around looking at hammers all the time, people would think that they're nuts. Would you agree with me? And then people are walking around with this cell phone all the time. They're running into each other. You go to New York City and everybody's wearing headphones and looking down. It's like they glow. Their skin is all white and all this stuff, because all they do is sit inside all day and stare at screens. And it's just insane. And, you know, if you want to change some things in your life, you have to change some things in your life. And my biggest key, the biggest key for me is the phone is a tool. It's a tool that can be used. And, you know, I'll take a step further and say social media is a tool. And I'll say, take a step further and say, if you're not in business, you should not be spending tons of time on social media, because social media is just a giant advertising platform. It's how people find out about things they can spend money on. That's how that's what social media is. So I think you were kind of asking, how do I basically live in this world with technology and kind of keep the big rocks first? Am I right about that? Okay, well, the biggest thing is learning how to unplug. And it really isn't that hard. In fact, if you take your phone, the one that you're probably listening to, after this podcast is over, you can take the side button and you can hold it down for about 3 or 4 seconds and it says power off. There are still off buttons in this world, and you can just turn it off. It's a monumental concept that many people have forgotten. But the other thing is, like, when I get home at the end of the night, my wife and son are inside. Those are the only two people I hope are inside when I get home. I don't want to take the whole world inside with me. So I turn the phone off and leave it in the truck. Or maybe I don't turn it off, but I leave it in the truck. That like people like roll over dead, you know, when I say that. Yeah, oh, you leave your phone in the truck? How do you run a business doing that? I run a business during business hours. At night, it's family hours. You know, it's family time. That's how I keep it very simple. I also removed social media icons from my phone totally. I cannot check Facebook. I cannot check Instagram on my phone. So if I'm out, I can't check it. I can't waste time. I can't walk up to the urinal and see what somebody's doing on Facebook, see what somebody ate and posted about on Instagram. I can't do it. I can't possibly waste time doing that when I'm out, you know? And the biggest thing is you have to be willing to change some things if you want to change some things in your life. If you, like, people are so stressed out today and they're so, you know, overstimulated, and it's just crazy. Like you said in your quote, like, there's such a higher meaning to life, but so many people are so distracted by technology, by that box that they think is their fifth extremity, that they don't have time to think of anything, because you can always, like I said earlier, you can always find something to do, something to reply to it. And if you think back 50 years ago when we didn't have cell phones, I'd be willing to bet the happiness rate was higher and that the peace of mind was higher, because they couldn't get distracted even if they wanted to. What are they going to do? I'll go, there's another carrier pigeon on my porch, you know? It doesn't work. It wouldn't work. Now, of course, 50 years ago, they had phones and all that kind of stuff, and you could get a call, but it was one line. It wasn't text. It wasn't pictures. It wasn't all this overstimulus that was crazy, and you didn't invite the whole world into your home at night when you get home at night. I mean, it's just crazy. Like, you have your most important. So many people say, oh, my life is all about my kids or my grandkids or my wife or something like that, but what do they spend all night doing? Looking down at the phone, texting so-and-so, watching stupid cat videos on YouTube. They spend their time doing all the things that aren't important because that dumb box that's in their hand is allowed to come into their house and interrupt. They invite the whole world in with them. So basically, to sum it up, turn it off. If you run a business, especially if you run a business on social media, remove the chance to see that while you're out and about, because if you can't be out doing it, like everybody says, oh, I'm a good multitasker. No, you're good at getting distracted. That's all that it is. You're not multitasking. That's a myth too. You can't do two things at once and do them right. When I'm out at work, I want to be out doing what I do, and I want to do it the best that I can. If I'm on Instagram dealing with this, or I'm on Facebook dealing with this, posting pictures about my, you know, it kills me, the people that post pictures of their feet, you know, like at the beach, you know, nobody wants to see your feet, you know, just enjoy the beach. Like, you look at your own feet, don't take pictures of them. But, you know, it's easy, but It's like common sense. Like, common sense is not very common, but it's very easy to turn it off, to let it in the car when you get home from a long day, you know, to not take it into the bathroom. Don't take it and sit in the bed and watch YouTube videos when your wife is sitting there. There's much better things if you're married to do in bed than sit on your phone. I promise. So it's really about leave it in the car, leave it somewhere else, put it on, do not disturb, do something to guard your time. Because if you're not, you're literally inviting any problem to hit you at all times. And I heard, and I'll end with this, I heard one person say that if you allow yourself to be available for problems, they will come up. If you remove yourself from the possibility of problems, they will not come up, or they'll come up a lot less. And you'll be amazed, if you're a business owner or you're in charge of other people, what people are capable of if you're not always there to answer their question. So, did that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great, Tony. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. You definitely covered it there, man. And I actually want to jump to something unique that you and I had not discussed yet, but I would say that you and I have discussed this because we recently talked about it while we were fishing. And it was funny when I told my younger brother that we did the interview, he's like, is that one of the, so basically the world got to hear the fireside or the creekside chats of Tony Campisi. I was like, yeah, they finally get to hear it. Because I said to Aaron, I was like, man, if anything, we're going to have to watch our time, because Tony's got so many opinions on so many things. And like I've always said, I think that you're a thought leader because a lot of this stuff comes natural to you. So, but my question is, and you and I talked about this, like I said, a couple weeks ago fishing, is how does technology and always being plugged in and things, how do those things affect your overall happiness and or peace?
Well, I think today in this world, we have a serious problem with everybody thinking that they're way cooler than they are. Now, I know I'm really cool, but most people aren't that. No, I'm just joking. No. But, like, people think, like, that everybody else wants to see what they want or wants to see what they're doing and all this kind of stuff. And they take their phone I've taken many pictures of fish that I take, because nowadays, if you catch a fish and you don't have a picture of it, you're a liar. So you have to have so it's not a problem. I'm not beating people up for taking their phone when they're going fishing and stuff like that, but it's the constant, being available that I think is causing the massive amounts of depression and anxiety in people today, that they're always available. Like, you can go fishing and the phone's ringing off the hook. I mean, it happens all the time. Like, you sit there and somebody's like calling you and texting you when you're trying to go out and enjoy yourself. And, you know, you have to be so protective now of your time, especially because you're literally taking, like, I imagine that you're putting your whole contact list in your pocket and saying, I'm available at all times, you know, and that's not healthy. That's not going to lead to a happy, fulfilled life, because then you're never going to check anything. You know, you're never going to feel like the to-do list is over. So it's really about, you know, people are just so high strung now, and they're so concerned with what everybody else thinks. And I really think that people live like a double identity, like everybody has their social media identity and then they have their real life. Like, you go and you see this person on Instagram and their life literally just looks perfect, and then you go and talk to them and their life is a wreck. You know, they're nothing like what you see online, but they know they have to manage this personality, and then they also have their real life personality. So it's really about living presently and living in the moment and being able to turn off. Like, there's a peace that I get, and Danny, I think you agreed with me that when the phone is on and in your pocket, it's like you have a subconscious awareness of it being there at all times. Do you agree with that? Absolutely. Like, you know it's there.
I'm the king of, you know, when I go to work, my phone's off the whole time, because here's why. Because if it's even on in the same room as me, it's like a tether to the technology world, and it's a tether to distractions. So I turn my phone on airplane mode or off probably 6 to 8 times a day, just in scenarios where I just want to unplug and just feel like I'm finally myself again. Because I don't know, there's just something about the phone and technology that just, it causes, like you said, that anxiety, and it causes that, I don't know, just lack of peace.
Yeah, it's ever present. And if you think back to, like, when you were a kid, like, you felt like you were present in the moment. And now you feel like you're present in this moment, but you're also present in this moment. And you're also in, like, you're like, you know, should I take a picture of this? No one's going to believe it. No one's going to know that I live a good life if I don't do this, you know, and take a picture of it. You know, nobody's going to know, you know, what kind of baby I'm having if we don't record the whole gender reveal. Now, I'm married. I had to record the whole gender reveal. You know, you got to do things that you got to do. But, like, people are so, like, they're pulled in all kinds of directions because that phone is, like, it's like what I was going to say is, when you turn that off, it's amazing the peace that you feel. Like, when it's off, it has to be off. Even do not disturb doesn't do it for me. Even airplane mode doesn't do it for me, because still some things can notify you. You know, I have like 150 notifications that, like, come up regardless if it's on airplane mode. You know, call this person, text this person, you know, send this invoice, do this, you know, pick up check here, you know, drop this off here. That stuff can still get you. You need to be able to turn it off. When you turn it off totally, 100%, you'll feel it. It might be hard at first. If you're, like, addicted to it, it might be hard at first, but you'll realize, like, this peace, and you'll be like, wow, this is, like, I have freedom. Like, wow, like, this is amazing. Like, I can actually look around and know that nobody's going to disturb this moment. And I can actually live a moment without sharing it. I think that's so important, to live things that only you can remember and not have to take a picture of everything. Pictures are for people who can't remember. If you live and everything needs to be documented, you're basically training your brain that you'll never remember anything. You have to, like, train your brain to remember and reminisce. And reminiscing is, like, big. That's big for me. I'm always, like I said, my past is my biggest motivation for my future. I'm always thinking, what did I love when I was younger? What did I love, growing up? What did I love? And that gets clouded out by that constant knowledge that there's something in my pocket that encouraged me to, number one, take a picture, share, text somebody on every experience that I have, and also somebody else can interrupt that time that I have. And that shouldn't be a freedom that you allow anyone. You should not allow anyone to get involved in everything that you do. So,
yeah, and wouldn't you agree that it's the mentality that if I don't post this, it didn't happen?
Yeah, right. And that's so not true. That is so not true. Denzel Washington, I think I saw somebody share something. Now, this sounds kind of hypocritical. I do get on Facebook once or twice, it's like once or twice a week now. And I saw it and it said that live, do big things in secret, like posting things, you're posting things online, but you have to be willing to basically do things in secret, not in secret. You're not hiding it, but you're doing things that only you are enjoying there. And then you can go back and tell stories. Like, there's no storytelling anymore because everybody knows. Like, there's no news that's new news. Like, I'm sure that people, like the listeners out there, have had somebody say, like, you like go up to someone and say, I'm blah blah blah, and they're like, oh, I already know, I saw it on Facebook. And it's like there's like the whole storytelling and bringing back good memories. And it's like I heard one time that the best thing about hunting and fishing is the time planning and talking is the time planning to go and after talking about it. Like, that is so true, isn't it, Danny?
Yeah, that absolutely is true. It's its own joy just planning it.
And then talking about it after, like, exactly. the memories age like a fine wine, really. And like, they get better and better and better. And if you like cloud that out with having to share that with everybody and you don't have that story and you don't have that nostalgic pull in that direction because nobody, like everybody already knows about it. Like, it removes the specialness of your life, and it kind of puts you up into comparison with everybody else's life. And you compare your life to everyone else on social media. Social media is just a highlight reel of what's going wrong or going right in most people's lives. You do that, you're going to make it's going to make your life look bad. So it's really important to just live your life, share some things that are going to uplift people, but the big things, the most important things, live those for yourself and take pride and ownership over those big things. You don't need to share those things. You can enjoy life and not have to share it. And I promise you, it still happened if nobody knows about it.
Yeah. And I think most people would admit that if they look back on their childhood, for people who had a positive childhood experience, they'd probably say that those times where we just spent all day outside playing in the summer, or when we went to the beach, or just summer vacation when we were younger, and we're in our mid-20s now. So when we were younger in the early 2000s or late 90s, people just simply enjoyed the time. We didn't have phones and we didn't think about sharing anything. We just shared the experience with each other. And I would say, because we always want this to be action oriented, if you're listening to this podcast, next time on a Saturday or a Sunday when you're spending time with people, turn your phone off.
The people
in the room will thank you. The people that you're spending time with will thank you, and you will enjoy it so much more because you will be present.
Yeah, exactly. And when you take your phone and you're sitting down with your friends and you sit that phone right beside you, you're sending them a subconscious message that says you're important until this thing rings. That's what you're saying. If you have your phone on and there's other people in the room, you're saying that if you talk as much as you want right now, but if this thing rings, you go to second priority. You can't do that to your life. You can't do that to the people that you love. It's not right. People do it all the time. Right now, like I said, you want to make some changes in your life. You got to be willing to make some changes in your life. Turn it off. Say you're most important right now. I don't care what's going on outside in the cyber world. You're what's most important. And to hit on what you were saying about like just going on vacation, like it reminds me of the times like you, Danny, you and I, when we're floating in the ocean on the last day, we couldn't have a phone even if we wanted. I mean, I'm sure there's waterproof phones, but God knows I wouldn't have a phone out in the ocean. And you're just sitting there and you're thinking, man, I can't wait to be back. Like, I know it was like so heartbreaking when we had to leave the beach, cause we don't live by the beach, but we loved it. And like that feeling, like when you're sitting there and you're floating in the water and you just feel so free. And it's just like, you're just so present in the moment. Yes, the water's present all around you. And it's like, yes, you're there and nobody else. There's so many people there, but nobody knows that you're there. Like, you're just there. And that's so important. And, like, for the older listeners on this podcast, like, you may not understand, like, that sense, like, of being present, because you're not maybe used to a life where you're always in 100 places at once. But it's so important for young people, if you're, you know, to be present in life, because I promise you, you will not regret not sharing it, but you will regret not living it.
Right.
So
you're exactly right. Well, Tony, we only have time to cover one more topic, and we only have just a couple minutes. So before we end this, and again, thank you so much for your time. This has been awesome, an awesome episode. I'm very proud of everything you're saying, very proud of you. And it's just so inspiring to hear all this, because it even reminds myself, like, man, I just want to shut my phone off, but my phone is how we're talking to you, so I can't do that right now, but I'm just excited.
It's a tool. Remember, it's a tool. A hammer has a purpose and the phone has a purpose.
Yep. I'm talking to you with my hammer right now.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Now don't go pee. Don't go stand at the urinal, you know, later today with your hammer. You know, just well, enjoy it, like, yeah, right. Like Charmin says, enjoy the go.
Okay. That life advice from Tony Campisi. Okay. So in closing, last topic.
Yep.
What's your opinion? We're going to connect what we just talked about with what we started the podcast. What is your opinion on when it comes to technology and children? Basically, raising kids and or the new generation who doesn't know any better, but are going to be raised in this world that we kind of just talked about.
Gotcha. Well, I could go over time, so cut me off if I do, but because this is a topic that I am extremely passionate about. And, you know, a parent's job is to be a parent. And I know that that sounds elementary, but it is so true. A parent's job is to be a parent. And if you think your child, your new, like, I look at my son Elijah and I say, hey, he's a new project, if you will. And everything that you do now is going to, like, you can't take it back. Like, where he lives now is always going to be his first home. I'm always going to be his dad. My wife Mariah is always going to be his mom. He's always going to have these experiences. They're always going to be a part of him. And a parent's job is to lead and disciple that child in a direction that is going to be beneficial for that child. And people put their kids, literally, like, we have a generation of iPad babysitters. And I'm about to throw everything that I have to say about that up against the wall and take it for what it's worth. But an iPad is not a babysitter. If your son or daughter is crying, if your son or daughter is not well behaved, if your son or daughter is not interacting, it's not the time to put an iPad in front of them. It's time to be a parent. It's time to do what you need to do. If you don't know, that's okay. But the iPad, the YouTube videos, that kind of stuff, the games, that's not a scapegoat. That's not a way to get out of parenting, which is what a lot of people are using it as. That's a tool. It's a hammer. You don't give a kid a knife. A knife is a hammer. A kid with a smartphone is like a kid with a gun. They're not trained yet on how to use it. They don't know how to limit themselves. They don't know what to do with it. So what are kids going to do with a gun? They're going to point it around. You know, when you give a kid a gun for the first time or a knife, you teach them how to cook. You don't hit people with the knife. You don't point the gun, even if it's unloaded. You don't do that kind of stuff. You train them right. But nowadays, people give the most powerful tool on earth to children. And the children are basically being raised by the iPad, by the media. The parents, like, you look at these parents and they're like, oh, these are such good people. And then you look at the kids and you're like, they're like little terrors. Why? Because it's because the iPad is raising them, not the parents, because the parents might not have time. I've heard it many times. I don't have time. You know, we don't have time. We don't want to get, like, when you go to the restaurant and you see mom, dad, little Billy and little Susie are sitting there. Mom and dad are on their phones. Little Susie's on her phone and little Billy's sitting in the high chair and he starts to fuss. And what do people do? They throw an iPad in his face. Oh, that's the saving grace. That's the save all. And there's a lot of people that are going to say, well, wait until you're in that position. I'm going to say right now, I'm going to be in that position. And then it's my choice as a father to do what I know is best. I'm not going to say that I'm never going to run into a situation where I'm going to be tempted to calm my son down by throwing an iPad in his face. But I'm going to say right now that I know what is the best decision to make. And so many people will, when that kid is crying, that kid is fussing, they'll throw the iPad in his face. And then basically they teach him that the iPad is then the saving grace, or the cell phone or the tablet, whatever, you know, that is the saving grace, that is the cure to their current, you know, upset. And you've seen it now. You take the phone away from a child and they go nuts. I see it. I see it in my life. I've seen it in people's lives. You take it away and they go crazy. It's like they're insane. And like it's a faulty parenting job, basically. And I'm not saying that somebody is a bad parent. I'm saying that if the child is becoming addicted to the technology, that is not the child's fault. That's what I'm trying to say here, is that the child is becoming addicted to the technology because someone is showing him or her that the answer to their problem, when they're upset, when they're, you know, stressed, when they're bored, whatever, is to go to technology. And technology, basically an iPad or an iPhone or a cell phone, is a window to all that is bad and all that is good in the world. And kids will always, because they're human in nature, they will always take the path of least resistance. So kids will look at things that they should not look at. They will do things that they shouldn't. They'll get involved in comparing themselves to things. They'll start to think not like kids. They'll start to worry about things in the world that aren't of that kids shouldn't be worried about. Kids need a limit on technology. They need parents to be parents. They need to do things that encourage real life skills. And watching cartoons all day on a screen or playing video games all day on a screen and doing that kind of stuff, that's not going to help or serve a child in their life. That's only going to hurt them. That's not going to serve them long term. That's not going to teach them how to have conversations, do all the life skills that some people in older generations took for granted. Kids are being born, they're getting thrown a cell phone in their face, and they're never learning how to be a human. They're just learning to watch and consume. They're just, you know, we're just raising consumers. And kids require parenting because parents, by definition, are the ones that are supposed to raise the kids. And it should not be left up to the cell phone or whatever. You know, the iPad babysitter, it's a bad thing. It's not right. And it should be limited strongly by the parent, by the caretaker, the person who is overseeing that child's welfare and well-being, because that is what your job is as a parent to do. So kids, I keep slamming parents, and I am a parent now, so I'm slamming myself, because I, like I said, I'm going to have that opportunity to want to take that road. And we have to constantly be aware that technology is a tool, just like a gun, just like a knife, just like a hammer. You don't put a tool that a child is not ready to use in their hand and forget about it. Just give them the thing and let them watch TV so he doesn't cry. Kids cry. Kids get upset. Kids will do what you allow them to do. Kids will do what you encourage them to do. And that is so, so important, because if all you ever do is encourage them to get in the screen, to get out of your hair, that's going to set the stage basically for a life just like that. You know, kids will almost always repeat what they see when they're growing up. So I know that I'm probably buttoned up against time, but you know, it's an important topic.
It is. And everything you're saying is great. So appreciate it so much. And we're just going to ask our two closing questions and then just take a minute for each. And then we're done. But man, that answer was awesome.
Yeah, Tony, the more and more I hear you speak, the more and more I know that you're going to be a great father, and I just have so much more respect for you. So, like Danny said, last two questions. What does it mean to you to fight the current?
Well, basically, if you think about it, if you're at a family get-together and you're on the river and let's say you fall in, you know, you had too many adult beverages and you fall in, well, the current is going to pull you down, but you desperately want to get back to that family picnic. You know, that's where everything that you want in life is. Well, you can just lay down and say, well, you know, I'm a victim. You know, the current's taking me. You just go down. you know, being able to fight the current is a skill in this day and age, because the world will kind of pull you in the direction that they want you to go. Like the world as a whole, like everybody's doing this. So, you know, going with the current is that if everybody else is doing it, then I should do it, you know, but that is probably the worst thing that you could do. Would you guys agree with me? Doing what everybody else is doing is probably the worst thing that you could do most of the time.
Yeah, that's why we named the podcast Fight the Current.
Yeah, absolutely. So fighting the current is saying, I want to go here. I want to be here. And that's going to take fighting the current. I want to get back to that family that's on the riverbank. So I actually have to swim upstream. If you take a fish and you whack it on the head and you throw it down the river, that's gonna float downstream. You don't want to be a dead fish. You want to be a living fish. You want to be that fish that can swim back up the current, because the fish knows where he wants to go. And as for you to fight the current is, I want to be here in my life. I want to be this kind of father. I want to be this kind of parent. I want to be this kind of son, daughter, wife, husband, whatever. I want to do that, and I'm going to do whatever it takes, whether everyone else is doing it or not. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get to that point. So it's basically saying, I want to be here, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get there. That's what fighting the current means to me.
That's awesome, Tony. You're such a wealth of knowledge. So last question here. I'm sure that all the listeners that are here with us, they're going to want to know, I want more of that Tony Campisi guy. So can you just let us know, how can our listeners continue to connect with you and kind of see what you're up to in your businesses and your family life and all of that?
Well, probably the best way to connect with me to get the constant feed is to follow my wife. But because she updates the social media with the big things, you know, more than I do. But honestly, if you really want to get some of this, it's probably best to go fishing with me or hunting with me or something like that. Sit in a dove field with a shotgun between your legs and some good food. And that's when, you know, we'll get together. We'll solve all the world's problems. But if you're not, you know, local, you can always look me up on Facebook. You can look, I think it's Tony Campisi. You can look on Instagram, Tony Campisi. You can follow my business, Dirty Worm, on Instagram or dirtyworm.net. You can also go to Facebook, and Dirty Worm Bait Co. is what you look up. But really, Tony Campisi, if you just look that up, TonyCampisi, that's how you find me on social media or anywhere in the cyber realm.
Awesome. And then also we're put all those links in the description too, just for our listeners that they can go ahead and have easy access to all of your business pages and all of that. But again, Tony, we just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know that it's not easy with a newborn in the house and with all that you're doing in your business life, but we truly, truly appreciate it. We know that our listeners have gotten a lot of value out of what you've had to say. And we look forward to having you back on future shows where we can kind of dig more into your entrepreneurial ventures and your business success.
Sure. Sounds good. I look forward to it, and I appreciate you guys having me on. I thank your listeners, all of them. And I say, you know, if you guys are wanting more of this, just subscribe to this podcast, because I know that these guys are going to put the best stuff in front of you every week.
All right. There you have it. You just listened to episode 4 of Fight the Current podcast. We are so happy that you're here with us. We thank you for listening to this, and we just want to say one more time, get on our Facebook page at Fight the Current. Get on our Instagram page at Fight the Current. I have a challenge for you guys listening to this podcast. We know that some of you like challenges, some of you are driven. Obviously, people who are attracted to a podcast named Fight the Current are going to be that way. I want to make a challenge to you. I challenge you, after you finish this podcast, to just go on your Facebook page or go on your social media page and just share this episode. We really feel like this is the episode that really exemplifies our message and our brand. And I just make a challenge to you to share the episode. If you do that, we're going to give you a shout out. We're going to call you out by name on our page. And we just really appreciate it. So thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned to episode 5.
You've been listening to the Fight the Current podcast, your guide for living an extraordinary life in an ordinary world. We ask you to please subscribe and review this podcast, as it helps out a lot. We sincerely hope that you've gotten value out of today. If so, we would love to hear from you. Check out our Facebook and Instagram pages and give us a shout out. Keep posted for our next upcoming episode. And until next time, swim upstream and fight the current.